Hello, good afternoon, or whatever it is where you are this afternoon here. I can't tell you how happy I am to see you all here and to make use of this amazing and remarkable technology whereby we can gather together without regard to where we live and speak about the gift of Ramana Maharshi. Sometimes it occurs to me that I ought to be able to find a way to say something different than what I generally say, if for no reason other than to keep people's interest. Sometimes it occurs to me that I should try to figure out some way to say it differently, or actually, what really occurs to me is that I am probably just saying the same thing every time I speak with you, wherever I speak with you. But really, I have so little to say. There is so little about Ramana's gift. It is so simple, so lacking in complication, that it is almost impossible to, enhance it or find new ways to approach it or find new interesting and entertaining aspects to it. In fact, if I had to choose one thing that above all else characterizes the practice of self-inquiry that I receive from Ramana, it is simplicity. The truth is, and I have to say also that the simplicity of it is both what makes it so profoundly easy and so profoundly difficult to communicate. It is easy beyond words to do and to reap the benefits of it. And it is difficult beyond comprehension actually to communicate the essence of it and the heart of it through speech. Not through any format, really. Last night we had a public meeting in Ojai here. We do that once a month here in our hometown. And a woman who I had never seen before came up to speak with me, and she said to me that there was one thing that she was curious about. She told me that she was herself a bad person, that she was mean to people and treated people badly for no reason other than that she wanted to. And she wanted to know whether self-inquiry was barred, was unavailable to her because of the fact that she's such a wicked person. Of course, I take the wicked person stuff with a grain of salt. I really haven't ever met anybody who was a bad person. It's my experience that all of us, without exception, are the thing that drives us more than anything else is the desire to be good, the desire to be right, the desire not to be bad. And it is that effort to be good that produces all the horror. But in any event, she wanted to know whether there was something about the fact that she was such a bad person that precluded her from benefiting from the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. And I told her, no. Really, self-inquiry cares not whether you're a saint or a sinner. The practice of self-inquiry will do its work no matter in what personality it takes form and is practiced. And she she kind of started crying and said cool and ran away. Now, the point of this is not so much the fact that self-inquiry is for saint or sinner, that it matters not, really doesn't have the slightest meaning, whether you think you're a good person or a bad person. There is no, absolutely no requirement of merit that is so much spoken of in so many spiritual traditions. Merit is irrelevant here. But the real point of it is the actual simplicity, the profound simplicity, the profound ease and infallibility of self-inquiry. And the fact that it really has almost nothing to do with spiritual matters, has nothing to do with matters of good or bad, of deserving or undeserving, of understanding or not understanding. Truth is, you don't have to understand self-inquiry for it to do its work on you. Truth is, you don't have to have good reasons for wanting to be happy in order to be happy. The truth is that there's nothing whatsoever that's required of you for the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi to do its job other than your willingness to try it without regard to your opinion about it, your understanding of it, your spiritual state, or anything else. All that's required is that you be willing to try it. And what it is that you're asked to try is so simple and so without any, so obviously without any negative, any possible negative effects, that it's hard to see why we don't all know this by now. Here's the deal. The claim is, the basis, the spiritual or philosophical basis of the Ramana's method of self-inquiry is this. It is that the only problem anywhere to be found in any human life or in human life in general is a false belief about what we are. Let me say that again. The only problem, the only issue, the cause of all misery, confusion, suffering, unhappiness, aggression, warfare, hatred, and on, the sole cause of all of that in the individual human consciousness and in the world of humanity at large is a false belief about what we are. We believe ourselves to be our lives, and that belief is so deep and so powerful and so entrenched that we are unconsciously, we don't see that belief. It's only the engine that drives everything, and we are absolutely and unconsciously convinced that everything is at stake in the way our lives unfold, and that obviously, since I am my life, I have everything to say about how it unfolds. It is I who decide whether I am good or bad, whether I do the right thing or wrong thing, whether I choose correctly or incorrectly, and so forth. And if I choose wrong, and I can tell I've chosen wrong when things go awry. If I choose wrong, my very being is at stake here. I am at stake in this life. Now this conviction is pretty much universal among human beings, despite the continuous evidence to the contrary, as we see in our day-to-day lives, that no matter how we want to do this rather than that, we most often do that rather than this. No matter how we want not to think these thoughts and rather to have these other thoughts, we almost invariably think the thoughts that we do not want to think. No matter how much we want the right things and want to not want the wrong things, we continue to want the wrong things. It should be obvious to us by now that we have nothing whatsoever to say about how our life unfolds. That's clear. The fact that we are not our lives needs more than experience and understanding to manifest. The belief that I am my life is unseen, powerful, and unseen. Ramana, and actually most of the spiritual traditions from the very beginning, tell us that, although they have different ways of telling us this, which may be why we don't hear it, but they all tell us in one way or another that we are not our lives, that we are something bigger or more vast or the source of that, or that we are love or that we are God or that we are big self rather than little self. But they all tell us that we are not our lives. The magnificent insight of Ramana Maharshi is not so much the recognition that the problem is a false belief that we are our lives. The magnificent insight of Ramana Maharshi is the recognition that the only thing that can possibly solve that problem is the truth, the reality of what I am. And that's the basis of self-inquiry. The self-evident, logical insight that if the problem is a false belief about what I am, the only solution is the truth. And what further, what can easily be seen once this takes hold is that the truth is easy. The truth is here. The truth of what I am is the one thing that is never absent. I am here. That is for sure. Everything else is not so much for sure. So, what Ramana tells us is that if we will move our attention, our conscious personal attention, directly to the experience of being, the certainty that I am, the reality that I am, if we will do that as often as we can, whenever we think of it, everything will be taken care of, and the false belief that I am my life will, over time, gradually, be eradicated. And in the absence of that belief, so too will be the belief that I am at stake in this life, so also will vanish, will go away. And in the absence of that belief that I am at stake in this life, life itself is revealed to be, just as it is, sweet and beautiful and easy. No need to make war against anything that takes place here. No need to try to make things right, try to understand what right is, try to get rid of the wrong. No need for any of that. All is taken care of. Now, I've been talking for a half hour or so now, and I still haven't effectively said what I want to say about the method, the infallible method of self-inquiry that's Ramana's gift to us. It's too simple for words. It's too simple to be communicated in this way. It is actually impossible for me to tell you what the nature of this method is by speaking to you. What is possible is for you to hear it. No matter that I am incapable of saying it, you can hear it because it speaks directly to your own experience. You know that you are here. There can be no doubt, no issue, no question, no confusion about the fact that you are here. You know that the reality of what you are never changes, never moves, is never absent, always here. You know that no matter that personal consciousness may be racked with huge experiences of suffering and confusion and ignorance and anger, lust and greed, that no matter that is present in personal consciousness, that this reality of here-ness that is you is unchanged and untouched by any of that, unaffected by it. You know that personal consciousness may be racked and moved about and shaken by experiences of bliss and glory and wonder and pleasure and satisfaction and clarity. And you know also that no matter how huge the experiences, the wondrous and good experiences may be, that you are still here, unchanged, untouched by any of it. You know that. There can't be any doubt about that. You're never missing. You're never absent. When you're calm, you are the same. When you are filled with anger, you are the same. When you are filled with pleasure and wonder, you are the same. You are the same in this moment as you were when you were three. And you know that. You know that. The experience of that doesn't have the same grossness and physicality to it that all the other experiences have. But it's here, undeniable. It's your shining face. It's here, and you can see it. It takes nothing to see it. Just that moment of willingness to look and see, what am I, really? How do I know that I am, really? And that moment of the indescribable, unexplainable certainty of being, that is the target of the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. And the promise is that that taste that is so universally, undeniably, inexplicably available to all humanity at all times, available to you at all times, that taste is the medicine that will destroy the disease of the belief that you are your life. You don't need to understand it. You don't need to understand why that would be so. You just need to be willing to do it. By which I mean that any time that it occurs to you to do so, you stop for just a second and look to see what it feels like to be. What it feels like to be you, underneath all the stories, underneath all the explanations, the names, the words. What's the real feeling of it? Just for a second. You don't have to stay there. You can't stay there. You don't have to leave there. Just taste it consciously with your personal attention, with your personal consciousness. See where from comes attention and consciousness. Taste it. Look for it. Look with all your heart to find what you are. And that itself, over time, destroys this false belief. And the consequence of that, the outcome of that, is not some new, transformed, transcended state of being. The state of being that you seek is here. It's you. So the outcome of that is not something new, although new things may come and go as they always have. The outcome of that is the absence of the belief that you are your life. And in the absence of the belief that you are your life, I promise you from my heart, you will discover that life is sweet beyond belief, just as it is. Nothing changed, just as it is. That life is everything you have ever wanted, just as it is. That life is not suffering, just as it is. And the impulse to fight against it, to change it, to do something about it, to destroy it, to destroy ego, to fix the mind, to end your wrongness, to wipe away your confusion, all of that vanishes. And this background of presence, this background of being that always is here, is more and more present in your conscious awareness. You are more and more consciously aware of it. So, self-inquiry is for everybody. Self-inquiry is for you and me and George Bush. For everybody. No one is barred or denied the possibility of knowing the truth of what they are, and in so knowing, being finished with the false idea that they are their life. No one is barred from that. Good or bad, saint or sinner, brilliant or not so brilliant, no one is barred from that. Nothing is required for that apart from the willingness to try it, the willingness to take the medicine. No spiritual understanding is required. No spiritual merit is required. No past lives are required. No righteousness is required. No unrighteousness is required. Just the willingness to see what you are, as often as you can bring yourself to do so. Just that. Nothing more. I wish I could find a way to say it simpler. I wish I could find a way to say it so that I could put a classified ad in the paper and anybody reading the paper would instantly know what I'm speaking of and try to take the medicine. And it ought to be that easy, really. Okay. I'm done. I'm finished. Who wants to speak with me?
We have now Ernie from Fall River, Massachusetts, on the line. Ernie, you can speak.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, Ernie. Hello, I'm glad to speak with you.
Thank you, John.
Well,
I listen to you, it seems like the less questions I have.
Well, that must mean I'm doing my job to some extent.
Well, I hope so. I guess I can sort of give a report and maybe a question will sneak in there somewhere. But I understand what you're instructing or offering is to feel the presence always been there, whether it been last week at presence.
Ernie, you're breaking up a little bit. Are you using voice activation?
I'm using a headset with a microphone.
Right, but is it set to voice activations? Can I ask you just a little technical thing here, okay? Are you on a Windows machine?
Yes.
Okay, do you see the menu where it says settings?
Yes.
Okay, would you open that menu?
Okay.
And then go to, I think it's sound input output.
Okay, I'm there.
Okay. Now you see the radio button that says push to talk?
Yes.
Would you click on that button? And then you click the set button and choose a key. Usually the control key is best. And then just click close and you should be able to press your control key and hold it down to speak.
How's that?
Very good. Much better.
Thank you.
Everybody who heard that, I would advise you to do the same thing. It's much better than voice activation. Okay, go on now, Ernie.
So what I've been doing lately is just whether I'm driving, walking, cooking, changing my baby's diapers, doesn't matter. I sort of just bring my attention to who's doing it, I guess. And then I find that my mind sometimes creeps in and looks for validation as to, do I feel different? Am I the same? Or should I be looking for something? And then I sort of turn away and just bring myself back to that that feeling of existing in a world and just stay there. Now, I'm not sure if that's the right thing to do or if I should be I guess it's so simple that my mind sort of confuses the whole thing.
Yes, that's to be expected, and you're very much right on the mark. The fact is that the mind will kick in and want to take you to looking in your state of mind and how you feel personally and so forth for confirmation of whether this is working or not. And that's okay. The essential nature of self-inquiry and the essential nature of the reality of what you are is that nothing can hurt you. Nothing. So it is to be expected that the mind will try to look in its own experience and its own characteristics to determine whether anything is happening. And it's exactly right what you said. You don't fight it, but just as you see what's happening, you bring your attention back to this experience of being. So that's perfect.
And just keep doing that as often as possible, I guess.
As often as possible. And don't concern yourself with what the mind's doing. Don't try to do anything about it at all.
Just watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't try to do anything about it at all. Don't concern yourself about the fact that you may find yourself caught up in the ways of the mind from time to time. Those times don't count. The only time that counts is the time when you are in this direct experience of reality. You follow me?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's exciting and scary at the same time.
Yes, of course it is. It challenges everything.
Yeah.
But even that can't hurt you. All that's required is that you do it.
Well, I can't thank you enough. You've really brought a lot of just down-to-earth clarity and potency to everything, and I appreciate everything you do.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. I'm very happy to hear that. I want to be of help. That's my purpose in this. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, Ernie. Thank you. Bye. Who's next?
Now we have Kent in Hercules, California. Hi, Kent.
Hello. I trust I can be heard.
Hello, Kent.
Hello.
Hello. Just 1 second, Kent, okay?
Sure.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
What can I do for you? It's good to hear from you.
Yes, yes. Good to be here. I'm here to respectfully complicate Ramana's simple gift, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, you started off with this nice talk saying that's for everyone, and now Raman at some point said that his practice of self-inquiry was only for the ripe souls, that those lacking mental focus would need to do, you know, breath control and other practices to be ready to do self-inquiry.
Yes, I know
what
he did.
What's your opinion on that? Yeah.
I think he was mistaken. I think that,
okay.
You know, Ramana is just a person, right, like the rest of us.
Right.
And he only, he's limited by the context in which he appears as far as his ability to understand things. And I think he was just mistaken. He didn't see, what he said was it was only for the sharp ones. But, you know, it is, in my experience, and I've had 8 years of experience with this now, in my experience, it is only for those who actually hear it. And by which I mean those who come to satsang and, or, you know, have the opportunity to have this possibility presented to them. Once anyone hears what it is that they are being asked to do, they can do it.
Okay. I'm just, one thing about, I think what Ernie, Ernie made me think of this, is that I once heard some fellow who was also realized said that the state of freedom is simply I. That was it, but it was indescribable, it had to be experienced. And when I turn my attention to I, you know, I don't feel particularly free, which, and I'm guessing, you know, it may be why other people don't do it more or keep doing it, or, you know, why it hasn't caught on like wildfire. Is it something that I don't know, noticing the freedom that's there, is that something that is a part of that occurs over time?
Yeah, I think you said it very well. But you see, and what you can see from what you've said already is that the state of freedom is not I, because that's saying that it is this and not that. The truth of the matter is that freedom is ever-present. There is never a moment when freedom is not here. And it is not any one particular thing in consciousness. It is the totality of reality is freedom. And it may be that our ideas about freedom, when we try to apply them to this reality, they don't fit. But so that if we're seeking freedom, that is with a complication that's added to it that makes it even more difficult. If we're seeking reality, that is not complicated at all. And if we find that reality is freedom itself, well, that's okay. But to seek freedom is to unnecessarily complicate it. It is setting a precondition and saying, because what we really want is the truth, Kent.
Okay.
And even if the truth is that life sucks, we ought to know that. You follow me?
Okay. So, yes, stick to that.
Yeah.
Seeking the truth of what we are, not freedom, not this, that, or the other thing. Okay.
That's right. Because that's what happens, right? Then we start comparing and saying, well, is this what I'm looking for? I'm looking for freedom. I say, you're not looking for freedom. You're not looking for love. You're not looking for satisfaction or clarification or transcendence or any of that. What you're looking for is what's real.
Okay.
And that's here.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that's clarifying.
I'm glad to be of help. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Kent.
Yes, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Who's next?
We now have Zach in Boston, Massachusetts. You can speak now, Zach.
Hello.
Hi, Zach.
Hello.
Hello, Zach. Are you on push to talk?
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to find the button.
It's okay.
Okay, I think I got it.
Okay.
Okay, first I'd like to say thank you so much for allowing yourself to be available like this to all of us, especially for free, you know.
You're really, really welcome.
And for the message and the simplicity and all that. But anyway, my question is kind of in the same vein as the last ones. I've read a lot of your stuff and listened to the podcast, and you mentioned that we're not looking for an experience or an emotion. So how will we know when we've found what we're looking for if nothing changes, you know?
Well, the truth is that things do change, but what changes is very subtle, and it takes some time. And Ramana has said this as well. It will probably be the case that you are absolutely free of the idea that you are your life before you know that that has happened. What you can expect to happen is that over time, things will just be easier, that there will be less of an impulse to try to fix yourself. There will be less of an impulse to try to cling or resist experiences and states that come and go within you. This lessening of the energy of resistance and clinging takes some time even to notice, and to connect it with self-inquiry is probably a step that doesn't actually happen on its own. The self-inquiry causes the end of this disease that is the belief that I am my life. But that takes time. And the effect of the end of that disease is not the spiritual experiences that we expect it to be. Because, in truth, we have been told by all of the great ones that what we seek is here now, just as it is. So what happens is that over time, you just find that life is sweet, just as it is. Do you follow me?
Yeah. But I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe. The first time I tried this...
You're not speaking, Zach. Zach, you have the button down? Well, I think that Zach is having some technical difficulty. I would very much, and actually he just fell off the edge of the earth. I suspect he'll be back, though. In the meantime, who's next? He's back. Wait a minute. He's back. Okay, Zach, you're back. I see that. And right now I'm going to talk to you. Are you there?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry.
It's okay. The vicissitudes of the world of computers.
Yes. What was I saying?
You're saying the first time you tried this.
Oh, yeah, I had, like, huge experiences and that lasted...
Okay, we've got more technical difficulties. Zach, you may be able to hear me even though I can't hear you. And even if you can't hear me, then everyone else can anyway. It is to be expected that in the beginning, huge experiences will assail you. They may be experiences of great bliss and clarity and breaking through and understanding and so forth. They may be experiences of horror and torture and torment. It's most often the case that these kind of experiences alternate with each other. This is to be expected. This is the nature of the mind. The fact is that as you inquire into the actual nature of what you are, the grip that the mind generally holds on experience itself loosens, and these big experiences come and assail you. They really mean nothing. They are nothing that needs to have anything done about them. You should enjoy the good ones and enjoy the bad ones, and continue to look for the reality of what you are. Okay. Zach seems to have crashed. So who's next, Carla?
We have Carter Wilson calling from New Mexico. And what city are you calling from, Carter?
Carter? I can barely hear you. You're going to need to make... No, I can barely hear you. I just a whisper in the background. You're going to need to make some adjustments to the volume on the output of your microphone and your sound card or in the settings of the TeamSpeak program. So if you will do that, and in the settings, everybody else can listen to this too. In the settings, when you go to sound input output settings, there is a button that says activate local test mode. If you click that, you will find that you are talking to yourself in your headphones with a little bit of delay. So you can use that to determine how it is you will be sounding. Okay? So... Still can't hear you, Carter. Oh, I can. Yeah, now I can hear me. Okay, so Carter, you work on that, and we'll move. We'll speak to someone else. Let us know when you're back, Carla.
Now we have Sajiv from Birmingham. UK, I hope I got your name right. Are you there?
Is that the person who says here is guest 7?
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry. I think I was not looking at that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, but you are breaking up very badly. Are you...
Okay, I'm using the push to talk as you suggested.
Okay, you have to hold the key down. Now we can hear you. Just keep the key held down. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. I think I sort of heard you answer to the question before. But I think it was more or less the answer to my question as well. But basically, what I wanted to ask was that when I do certain query, I noticed that at certain times it's quite easy, especially when I'm quite ill and have nothing else to do, I kind of think back to my being and myself. But other times, sometimes I notice my mind is maybe a little bit clouded, with preoccupied things, and maybe also the fact that there's a certain state of mind that I'm. And at those days, I think I find that it's been quite a little bit difficult. Well, so is it? And I also notice that the things come and go, and I have no control over it. So is it that you just need to wait for a calm state of mind for you to do self-inquiry, or what is your comment on that?
What I have to say is that you should do self-inquiry whenever it's possible for you to do so. If it's possible for you to do so only when there's a calm state of mind, that's fine. If you find that, for example, when you talk about mind being confused and cloudy and so forth, if you find that you can just in those times, just for a second, check and see if you are the same. That's self-inquiry also. But do not concern yourself with the times that you are caught up in the activities of mind. Do not concern yourself with that at all. Those times are of no importance whatsoever. The only time that is of importance is the time you spend in the direct experience of the reality of what you are. So if that happens when mind is calm and no other time, that's perfectly okay. Do you follow me?
Right. Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad to be of help.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Bob. Thank you.
You're welcome. Who's next, Carla?
We have Carter Wilson on the line again, calling from New Mexico. Let's see. Carter?
Okay. Can you hear me
okay,
now?
Okay. There you are.
Great. Sorry about that. I had the mic plugged into the wrong socket, so.
All right. Are you on anyway, push to talk, Carter?
Yeah.
Okay, hold.
I don't
the key
have
held.
Very...
Keep the
okay,
key down.
Here I...
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Okay, so first of all, just thank you so much, John, for, like Zach was saying, you know, for giving us this opportunity. Like, I would never be able to, I'm pretty poor, so I wouldn't be able to come out to California to see you in person. So this is really great for me.
You're welcome.
The thing you were talking about with Zach, I have a lot of questions about the practice, if you can call it that. In particular, you were saying that there are different experiences that are of no consequence to, you know, the experiences we have as human beings, whether spiritual or otherwise, are of no consequence really to the truth, right?
Right.
But I'm not clear about the element of feeling in with regard to the truth or who I am. You know, I mean, there's a corresponding feeling. You talk about that feeling, feeling the self, or I'm not sure how you would put it, but and so I'm so like, God, when I feel myself, there's a underlying sense of happiness that seems to become the pervading feeling in any spiritual experience. It's like a spiritual experience always feels like it's just halfway there, but there's a part of that experience that feels like the self. You know, there's the bliss or the happiness of being, I guess you could call it. So my question is, what does that... That's just a feeling too, though. That's something I experience. So how is that connected with who I am?
Well, in the same way that any other feeling is connected with who you are, which is to say, not much at all. It is the reality of what you are is this. You are here, are you not, Carter?
Yeah, that I understand very clearly.
And it is that experience of being here that is absolutely indescribable, that really doesn't have characteristics to it. That's the reality. That. And it is almost impossible to speak about. Now, the experience of the bliss of being, which certainly does come, it certainly does rise and fall. It rises and falls whether you are doing self-inquiry or not, although in the course of self-inquiry it may be more noticeable. This is not a problem. It's not something that needs to be done away with. It just is beside the point of discovering the reality of what you are. It is like a kiss and nothing more. It comes and goes. You follow me?
Yeah, but I can't figure out. I mean, it's clear to me that I am always right here, you know, that there's some sort of shift that has to take place where I identify with the present moment in which...
Stop a second. There is no shift that needs to take place in which you identify with the present moment. The only shift that needs to take place is the eradication of the belief that you are something else. And that belief is not something that you can be consciously aware of. Therefore, there is nothing you can do within personal consciousness to do anything about that belief. It is the taste of reality that over time eradicates that belief, and that's why I call it medicine. There's no way in the world that you can force yourself to believe yourself to be the present moment. There's no way in the world that you can force yourself to stop believing that you are your life. All you can do is taste reality as often as you can possibly do so, and my promise is that over time, that belief that you are your life will vanish before you even notice it in your conscious, personal consciousness. It will be gone. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I think so. But what okay. Okay, so just simply looking at or inquiring into, for lack of a better way of putting it, the present moment will do all of the work?
That's right. That's exactly what I'm saying. Just that will do all the work.
Okay.
Okay? And I really advise you to think of it instead of as some spiritual activity, to think of it as medicine. Just something very simple, practical, not something that is spiritual in nature. And just do it, and it'll do all the work. That's an excellent way to put it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Let me know how you're doing over time, okay?
I will.
Okay, thank you, Carter.
Thank you.
Who's next? Okay.
We have Barry calling from Henderson, Nevada. Barry?
Barry, hello.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me this time?
I can.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Last time you had one of these. Good. Last time you had one of these, I couldn't make my microphone work. I guess this time I did.
Yes, it is breaking up a little bit, but you are.
Yeah, I have my finger on the control. I don't know what else to touch it or set it with, but
you're okay.
I'll just try to speak clear. Anyway, okay. I had the pleasure of seeing you speak last month, and then hearing this one last month, and been reading other things on your website, and thank you for being out there for the universe to hear, and you'll continue to get my support to pass your word along. It's not often in life you hear somebody speak what it is you feel, and that's what I hear from you, is what it is I see and what it is I believe in. And you have my support, and I hope the rest of the world can find out how easy it is to just be themselves. And I think it's a worthwhile endeavor. And I did mention when I did come to your satsang or your meeting in Ojai, which is a beautiful place, I invite the world to go there and see you. It's full of peace and tranquility, and it's a great place to be from and do your work from. And I look forward to coming back again. I'll be up again in July and maybe before. Maybe this
thank
time
you
I'll
very
get
much,
to speak
Barry.
To in person.
Thank
so
you
I'm
very
not
much.
Going to
I
take
remember,
up a lot of time except to tell everybody that just follow the things you say, and they'll find some peace and happiness in their life. Now you remember me.
Well, I do remember you. Yeah.
Because you just have a tremendous insight. Your voice, by the way, is great to hear. It's a calming presence.
Okay.
And I said, well, you reached me.
Yes, I know. I remember that.
You can reach the rest of the world, too.
I remember that.
And you will. And anyway, let's all keep it up. And please, I'll hope to speak again maybe add something one of these days.
Okay. Thank you very much, Barry.
And I will see you again, and I will be back. And other than that, being I am is such a powerful thing. And thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. So who's next? Anyone?
We have Bill calling from Melbourne, Australia. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Bill. I can hear you.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very well. What can I do for you?
Well, I guess I did have questions, but in the overall scheme of things, they seem to have disappeared from my mind. But I'm pleased to hear your voice. I stumbled across this concept of your satsang, and I thought, being a worldwide event, it was really something. And I'm most pleased to just say a few words. Yes.
Okay. Please do.
I like the simplicity of your message. I guess I've gone down the road. I've read all the books, and in Melbourne we don't get many. Call them spiritual teachers, for want of a better word. But we did have a visit from Gangaji last year, and I went to both of her public meetings, and I got a great deal of value from that. And it's just nice to be able to join in a satsang, even from, you know, a remote location, well, what seems like a remote location like this. So thanks, John. Yeah.
Oh, you're very welcome, Bill. This business of world satsang through the Internet just really kind of takes my breath away. I am so grateful for the opportunity to be able to speak about these things without regard to our physical location. This is a great gift, and I'm very happy to hear from you, Bill.
Okay. I have one question.
Okay.
I guess it's the question that, you know, how long does this go on, you know, this, before we forget to... I guess to keep reminding ourselves, I'm not young, and I just like some sort of input. How long can I expect this to go on? Yeah.
Well, pretty much for the rest of your life, but the
keep asking.
That's just keep tasting. You know, there's a real difference
tasting,
between
the
feel of asking and the feel of tasting. Because the truth is that you're here. You know already the reality of what you are. You may not know that that is the reality of what you are, but you know it. And the medicine and the instruction and the practice is merely to bring your attention there. Now, the time will come when you'll find that there is no time when you don't have the conscious background awareness of what's real. When you're not conscious of this background awareness of what's real. But that doesn't end it. That's just your natural state. That's what Ramana speaks of as Sahaj Samadhi. And that's your natural state.
Fantastic.
So you just keep looking, keep tasting. And over time, the time that you are aware of this reality grows. And
thanks, John.
Yeah. Okay. Is that helpful?
I'll keep tasting. Yes, it's very helpful. I'll just keep tasting. Thank you.
You're very... Yes, okay. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Anybody else? Okay. I'm going to go. I can't possibly express to you all my gratitude for your presence here. I can't possibly express to you all my gratitude for your response to the natural willingness to find out what's real. Find out what I am, really. And I am your servant, truly. I am in your service. If there's anything you can think of that you want to speak to me about or say to me, please write to me. My email is johnsherman@riverganga.org. And we will certainly be continuing these world satsangs. What a concept. It makes me giggle. We will certainly continue these world satsangs. I think we're trying to do them every other week, except when other circumstances intervene. But I do believe we're going to have one in 2 weeks, and Carla will let you know more specifically what's coming up. Thank you from my heart for your attention and your time here. Thank you for your willingness to know what's real. Thank you for this satsang. Om Shanti. May all being know itself.
Thank you for being here with us today. You can listen to recordings of meetings and satsang with John on our website at www.riverganga.org. Just click on the submenu podcast on the top navigation menu. You can read John's blog at www.johnsherman.org. You can order recordings of meetings in satsang with John on video, audio CD, or cassette tape at riverganga.org. Just click on Supporting Satsang on the top navigation menu. You can also find detailed information about meetings in satsang with John on our website. Click on the menu Schedule under Satsang Events, and that's always up to date. The recording of the meeting today, if all went well, will be available on our website, and you can listen to it and download it freely. And you just look for only online satsang archives. You can download them or listen to them on our website. Our next meeting will be May 13th at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, minus 8 GMT. If you had any difficulties hearing John or speaking with him, let us know. Send an email to info@riverganga.org and give us as much detail as you can, and we'll try to figure out together how to improve your reception. I'd like to let you know, too, that John will be in Berkeley in Northern California on May 6th. If you're around that area, or if you know, if you have friends there, let them know. And also, we'll be in Chicago for the first time from June 22nd through June 24th. Information about these events is available on our website. Thank you very much for being here, and we'll talk to you again on May 13th. Thank you.